So firstly, thank you everyone for attending this morning. Everyone got their headsets on, everyone can hear us okay? It's a bit weird. So thanks very much for attending. I know that the first session on the morning after the night before is always a challenge to get along to, so it's nice to see a lot of you guys turning out. Hopefully no one's got a headache from some of those craft beers last night. I had one or two of them, and they were sort of dangerous looking stuff that type that give me a bit of a headache. Just to introduce ourselves, I'm James Lewis. I'm an infrastructure consultant from Cloud Solutions. I've been working with Cloud for about 2.5 years now, and been building solutions around Office 365 and Azure for some of our enterprise and government customers. Andreas, I can hand over to you.
Yeah, my name is Andreas Wasita. I'm a Cloud Infrastructure Consultant at Cloud Solutions. My day-to-day focus is designing a cloud-based solution and hybrid cloud solution for all the enterprise across Australia.
Cool. So just very quickly, a little bit about Cloud. So we're all about moving organisations to the cloud, as you can tell by our name. We're a Microsoft Gold partner for communications and identity and access management. And you can also see there that we're proud winners of a couple of Microsoft Partner Awards for cloud packaged solution partners in collaboration and content. Just up the top there as well, we've got our Twitter handles, so be sure to follow us. Andreas is going to actually post some links to the content and some of the things that we're talking about during the session, so you'll be able to find some more information if you look at that resource. Andreas is also the best dressed man in IT. If you step out from behind the thing there, mate, he's got his nice azure coloured pants. He might actually give you some details where you can pick up a pair for yourself if you're lucky. All right, so I wanted to kick off with a quote. So you can read there that what we're being told is by 2016, most enterprise organisations will need to have federated single sign-on solution. So why is single sign-on important, and why do enterprise need single sign-on? So predominantly to consolidate the number of enterprise identities and identity islands that are created within an enterprise organisation. Now that has a number of benefits. One of the main benefits is obviously reducing the number of usernames and passwords that users have, and that has a flow-on effect to reducing the number of help desk calls and things like that that users would get that organisations would get for password-related resets and things like that. So the smaller number of identities you have, the smaller number of passwords that you need to remember, and obviously a smaller workload. Now again, Gartner are also telling us that up to 10 to 30% of all help desk related calls are related to password resets. So there are a number of things that you can do to try and minimise that, and by federating identities and creating single sign-on, that's obviously one of those ways. The second point around importance of federated single sign-on is around end user experience as well. So the more usernames and the more passwords that you have, the more places that you need to remember where they need to be used. And that relates, that then flows onto a security related issue, because people write passwords on a bit of sticky pad and pin it to their monitor, or they write it on the desk, or they use the same password for multiple different identities. And if you don't control that identity provider, then that obviously has, again, security issues if that identity provider is compromised, and then passwords are compromised and then reused and things like that. So being able to federated single sign-on, being able to control and own that identity and the security and the access control and things like that is quite important. So just to quickly touch on what we wanted to cover off today. So we wanted to talk about the various federated single sign-on deployment scenarios that you have options to deploy. We wanted to talk about the specific Azure deployment benefits and why we should deploy into Azure, and why it's not as difficult and hard as what you may think. Then just lastly, we wanted to touch on just a couple of the other components of the federated single sign-on solution for Office 365 around AAD Sync, and then lastly just touch on AAD Connect as well. Okay, so if we look at the three, there's basically three different scenarios we have for deployment of a Microsoft-based federated single sign-on for Office 365. And it's pretty much a wholly on-premise based deployment of that solution. We've got a wholly Azure based deployment, and then naturally we have a hybrid based deployment as well. Now there might be a number of reasons why you would choose each one of those scenarios, and we'll talk through a few of those today. So it's worth noting that Andreas, the background for why Andreas and I are doing the talk today is that we've actually deployed the Azure-based deployment pattern for a number of our enterprise customers in New South Wales. We're from Sydney, and we thought we'd share that with you guys. Okay, so I wanted to talk about what our customers are telling us now. One of the reasons that they sort of have an issue with using ADFS and Federated Single Sign-On is that they have issues with data center capacity. They have issues with on-premises infrastructure. They've got a to the cloud strategy. They might be trying to move all of their stuff to the cloud. If they had a data center like this, they probably got broader issues. But that's another point. Having to deploy a bunch of additional on-premise infrastructure to provide authentication services to Office 365 seems counterintuitive. The second point that customers talk to us about having concerns with deploying ADFS and specifically deploying it on-premise is around the offline aspect of it. So if you have an issue with your on-premise data center or the connectivity to those servers, then you're effectively losing your ability to authenticate to your Office 365 solution, which again is kind of counterintuitive when we've got this like to the cloud sort of strategy. Another point around deploying on-premise based federated single sign-on solution is around the high availability and resiliency of that solution. So typically, if you want to deploy this on-premise, then you're going to need to have some sort of like high-end networking equipment and load balancing equipment to be able to provide load balance services across your ADFS farms and your web application proxies. And that typically comes, if you don't already have that infrastructure in your organisation, that comes at a reasonable cost to go and procure that. But then you also have to have the skills and expertise within your IT teams or your network providers or whatever to then be able to configure that and manage that for you. And then the last point is around security. So people have lots of ideas around security. So some people think that their on-premises or environment are far more secure than the Azure environment or a Microsoft environment. In many cases, that might be the case. But we want to show you later on that that there are some security benefits of deploying into the Azure data center, and it's something that can benefit you. So basically, they tell us that it's all too hard. And do we need to do federated single sign-on at all? And we don't want to do it on-premise. So then they sort of like lose those benefits that we talked about earlier in the first slide around, consolidating identities and, managing your Office 365 environment effectively. So just to move on to what a typical on-premise deployment for deployment pattern for the ADFS Federated Single Sign-On solution would look like. So we start off with, we obviously need to have an ADFS server, one ADFS server to provide secure token signing. Then if we want to publish our applications to the internet, we're going to need to have some sort of proxy, and in this case we're talking about the Microsoft solution, so we talk about a web application proxy. So you're going to need to have firewalls, you're going to have network availability zones and things like that. And then if you want to provide some level of high availability for those solutions, you're then going to need to duplicate that infrastructure within your single data center there. And you're going to need to provide load balance solutions across both the external web application proxies, and you're going to need to provide load balancing for your internal ADFS farm as well. Now, if you want to provide site-based resiliency and DR, then you're going to need to replicate that into another location outside of your main data center. And then if you want to provide resiliency within that environment, you're going to need to duplicate that again there. And again, you're going to need some complex networking and load balancing solutions in place to achieve that outcome. So like I said there in the points, so basically we need to have a lot of infrastructure, we need to have a lot of storage to then manage that infrastructure, and we need to have facilities. So whether that's physical, not many people use physical servers anymore, but even like virtual hosts, managing capacity on those, and if you are running out of space or your organisation has a sort of a cloud-based focus, then deploying it on-premise, it seems counterintuitive. The second point there is again around that dependency on this internal configuration for authentication access. So if that goes offline, then typically you've got an issue with accessing your cloud services. And then again, the last point I made again was around the network gear and the configuration. Okay, so we'll move on to the Azure deployment configuration, which I guess is the main part of what we wanted to cover off and talk to you guys about today. So we can see here that basically the architecture that we would deploy for a similar Federated Single Sign-On solution wholly contained within Azure is we need to have a VNet, which is a virtual network within inside the Azure container. We then need to provision a what's known as a cloud service. We provision a new service called an internal load balancer, and this is relatively new, and then we stick the internal load balancer to the cloud service, which then gives us a sort of a layer 4 load balancing capability for our internal ADFS servers. Now see there, when we deploy the ADFS servers, we deploy them into an availability set, so that's that yellow box you can see around those two servers. And the availability set ensures high availability and resiliency for those servers, and we'll touch on that in a moment as well. So once we've configured the ADFS and the internal load balancing configuration, we create the native external cloud service with the public endpoints, which is the sort of the service that's been available in Azure for a little while now. And then similarly, we create our web application proxies in that availability set, published through that external cloud service. And we can wrap endpoint security around that endpoint cloud service, so we can do things like restrict who can access it and where they can access it from and things, or we can make it available to anybody that we like as well. So you can see that that you can get a relatively simple configuration for a federated single sign-on deployment within an Azure container, leveraging some of those really good features that are available to you there. So you're paying a per monthly service cost for a lot of those components. It's interesting to note that the cloud services and then the networking components of those of that service is free, so it doesn't cost you any additional money. So you obviously need to set it up and configure it, and Andreas will show you how to do that a little bit later on. So there are some cost saving benefits. There's some sort of like ease of deployment, and we'll touch on those things a little bit later as well. Okay, so just to go through the VM high availability concepts in just a little bit more detail. So if you have multiple VMs connected to a cloud service, then you must deploy them into an availability set. And what that does is it ensures that your VMs are located in different fault domains. So what that means is in the traditional sense that you don't have servers that are in the same rack. So if you have a localized failure in your data center, it's not going to affect your end-to-end service. Now, if you do deploy your configuration in the availability sets and have at least two VMs in there, then Microsoft will give you a 99.95% SLA around the availability of that service. All right, so I think it's demo time, and I'll hand over to my friend Andreas.
All right, thanks, James. That's a great concept, great architecture as well. Now, you want to see James talk about the cloud service, James talking about the load balancing solution for our IDFS farm, and James talk about the availability set. So I will show you both in GUI and PowerShell about the cloud service and the load balancing for our IDFS service. So because we are cloud with the K, so I created a cloud service farm with the cattle as a K. So if we go to Cattle Web in here, so Cattle Web is a cloud service for our web application proxy. So if you see in here the public VIP, it's a 23.101.19.162. Oh, by the way, you don't need to write down that one. I will kill the service after. So yes, yeah, so what happened is this cloud service of the Cattle Web will provide a native load balance. So you don't need to configure anything for this cloud service. So this cloud service will provide you the native load balancing solution for our web application proxy. Now, what about the security of the cloud service? So if you are from the SecOps, you might worry about, oh, I don't want to put my proxy in Azure because I can't configure my my security. Well, that's not entirely true. So if we go to our Web 01 server here, so you can specify your remote desktop or SSL 443 in this case for our Federation services. So you can manage your ACL here, which you can allow or deny. So say all your user base in Australia, so you can have your Australia-based IP range that you permit to allow this cloud service. And let's say you're worried about external or foreign IP address accessing your proxy, you can deny it. Say, oh, I want to block all the users from X Bermuda or China or Russia, and I want to allow it only for Australia. You can specify your endpoints from here. Okay, that's cloud service. But what about the internal load balance? So how do I create it? Anyone here from the networks? Anyone here can raise a hand from the network team? Okay. So if you're in a network team, usually what happens is it will take you, it's a bit difficult to configure the load balance. So I have to do this, do that. In a Azure, you only need 3 steps to configure the proper layer 4 load balancing solution. So the first is you just need to create the ILB using a PowerShell and then stick it to your cloud service. And number 2, you need to configure the endpoints for the internal load balance. And number 3, which is the script here that I will execute, so I will already configure the load balance for our IDFS service. So I will run this script that will show you what is the Azure internal load balance looks like. Okay. So if you notice the IP address in here, it's 10.0.1.100. That's the IP address of the internal load balancing, which is that stick on the cloud service. If you remember before that I show you the cloud service on the web, that's showing the external IP address and the ADFS for the, sorry, the Azure internal load balance here, we configure with the .100, which is internal IP address.
So it's all important, right, to notice, Andreas, that that's a new, relatively new feature in Azure, and it's quite powerful because previously you would have had no choice but to, if you wanted to get high availability and network load balancing, you would have had to use an on-premise device to do that internal load balancing for you for those Azure VMs. So now we can take that component away from on-premise and put it completely in the Azure subscription container. So.
Correct. That's a good point, James. Now, we talked about the availability set before. Now, so how does it look like, the availability set? So if we run the script in here to check our ADFS service, they will show you the availability set name, which is FSAS. That will give us the 99.95% uptime. for our IDFS service. Now, what about in GUI? How do I check it in GUI? Yeah, you can check it in GUI too. So if we jump back to our GUI, let's have a look at the one of IDFS service. And you can see there is the been configured with the FSAS availability set. Now, let's try to log in to our ADFS service.
Just before you do that, did you want to show the deployment scripts that we had to deploy that solution?
That's a good point, James.
Within 10 minutes?
Correct. So we configured this ADFS service and wrapped totally with the PowerShells. So the PowerShell script is available online there in our blog. If you want to take advantage, you want to deploy the solution under 10 minutes, that you can go to our blog, and we use this script to configure the whole ADFS service under 10 minutes last night, actually, just before the session. So I will post it in my Twitters. If you follow my Twitters, actually, I will do it now.
And that's quite useful if you wanted to. Wouldn't suggest you deploy your production environment, you know, in 10 minutes using the script. But certainly, if you're looking to test it or you know play around with it, it's quite a useful script just to run up and provision those services.
Yeah, very good point. Now, let's test our ADFS service. So we go to our lovely Internet Explorer here, and that's our ADFS service. Happy Ranch Federation Services. Let's try to sign in. Can I use your username, James?
Sure.
And we get the token. You're signed in now. Now, we're talking about the highly available cloud-based single sign-on solutions. What if I take one of the service out? Do you mind to do that, James?
I think you should live dangerously and take out one of the WAPs and one of the ADFS servers.
All right, let's do that. We kill the one of the WAP server and one of the ADFS server here using the script. Let's simulate the failure in the Azure, which is very unlikely, but Things happen. Yep. One of the system admin guys, pretty naughty with their PowerShells, and they just run some of the random scripts. And if we go back to our GUI, it will show very shortly that this service has been stopped.
Doesn't want to stop?
It takes a while sometimes. Okay. Well, yeah, you can use the GUI. That's a good point. Correct, yeah. Oh, let's do that. Let's stop it with the GUI.
It makes it look more complicated if you use PowerShell.
Yeah, well, I like something instant, but they don't like it. Let's shut the service down. It's stopping now. All right. So let's go back to our Federation services, sign out, release a token, close it. Let's go back and let's see, hope it works. You're not signed in. Let you see the same username and password. Oh, service crash. No. I lost
maybe
connection.
Got an issue outage.
Yeah. I lost the connection to the service. Okay. and you're still able to sign in. So availability set will give you the 99.95% uptime for those services. So if you lose one of the server, you're not worried about the, my users can't log in back to my services. In the next slide, James will show you actually about something, a very interesting concept.
Okay, thanks very much, Andreas, for that. Okay, so what I wanted to just cover off next was around some of that rapid recovery and resilience component. So I wanted to share a little analogy with you guys, and it sort of ties back to what we were talking about in our ADFS demo. So who's heard of the concept of cattle and pets? Anyone? So typically pets in the context of real life are things that you love and you nurture and you give them special names, and if they get sick, you nurse them back to health and those sort of things. And if you've got cattle, then you've got a head of cattle, and if you have a problem with any of the cattle, you know, you just replace them and get rid of them. They don't have specific names and you don't have that sort of close affinity to them. So if we think about Azure servers in the same context as cattle, you can see our cattle ranch that we've created before. You notice that all of our servers just have generic names like ADFS1, ADFS2, WAP1, WAP2. They perform a specific service, they're stateless. So if we have an issue and we lose one, then we don't spend a lot of time troubleshooting it and trying to figure out what's wrong with it and trying to recover it, and we don't go to backups and things like that. We would have a pre-provisioned template that has a lot of the services, would need some very sort of quick configuration that we could script into a PowerShell command and have it as part of an operational process. And then we just replace that server in there. So there's, I guess, the resiliency of the platform allows you to do this. And you can do this typically within minutes, and you don't necessarily, like we saw before, the availability set ensures the uptime of your service. So you can sort of not necessarily have to worry about troubleshooting and recovering servers that have an issue. The next point I wanted to talk about was the scalability of the architecture. So in a typical architecture of 1,000 to 15,000 seats, we might see what we talked about before, two ADFS servers in an ADFS farm and some web application servers to publish that out. If you then move to a 15,000 to 60,000 user base environment, you would obviously need to have your same number of ADFS servers, but we can quite easily and rapidly, using the same concepts as what we used in the previous slide, scale that out very quickly from three to five servers. Now, obviously, five servers is the maximum amount of servers that you can have in an ADFS WID-based deployment. And there are, obviously, we're not going to discuss it today, but there are architectures where you could deploy a SQL database for more resiliency, and if you needed to scale out past that. And then obviously you can still deploy your two web application proxies. So the scalability of the architecture within Azure is quite easy to do as well. We didn't see before in the management portal, but there's a lot of statistics that we can get around the usage of those servers, so we can quite easily see if we can kind of create a nice baseline and then start to see where they're moving in terms of processing and CPU usage, so we can kind of monitor that stuff as well out of that console. So the next point that I wanted to talk about was, we talked about the two other deployment scenarios. So we had the on-premise, wholly on-premise deployment scenario, the wholly Azure-based deployment scenario, and then this is an example of a hybrid-based deployment configuration as well. Now, in this scenario, we've got our on-premise environment where we've got two ADFS servers in the ADFS farm, and we might deploy this type of scenario if we had other internal applications that were using that secure token service for authentication purposes, and if we had an issue with the site-to-site VPN that you can see between the Azure data center and the on-premise data center. Then we can maintain accessibility for our on-premise consumers of that token signing service. And then through the public internet, we can still maintain service to the cloud-based users of the Office 365 service. So that gives you a little bit of flexibility if you had different types of requirements for your radio. You weren't solely using it for Office 365. Now there are obviously different scenarios. We could kind of have it purely as a DR scenario. So if you did lose servers on premise, you can fail over to the cloud and vice versa. And we could also switch the web application proxies across to our on-premise environment and run it in that configuration as well if you wanted to. If your network guys had an issue like we talked about before, they didn't want to publish authentication services out through Azure for whatever reason, because or you wanted to leverage on-premise proxy reverse proxy publishing services as well. So just a quick note on VM sizing. And this kind of ties back to what we were talking about before about the cattle and the pet sort of type scenario as well. So you'll see there that the MS recommendation for an ADFS or WAP server is an 8-core 4-gig box. Now I've got the two different sizes, the A3 instance, which is the 4-core 7-gig, and the A4, which is the 8-core 14-gig. Now that's the Microsoft recommended sizing for the ADFS and WAP server. The minimum size that they recommend is in line with that A3 server. So typically what we recommend in the Azure environment is to sort of scale out. So use a large number of smaller instances rather than a smaller number of larger instances, if that makes sense. So you can see there just from the cost differential per month, and that's just list price that we've got lately. So you can see that it's almost double the cost, so it's actually far more effective and you can control your costs a lot better if you deploy a smaller number of your A3 instances and then scale them out like we showed you before if you start to run into capacity and performance constraints with the solution. Okay, so just very quickly, some just additional design considerations. So operational configuration management, nothing stopping you from using your flavour of operations management, configuration management from on-premise through to those servers, that'll work fine. So use SCOM, SCCM or whatever it is that you use. A note on passive authentication flows, and we talked before in the hybrid scenario, you saw that there's a site-to-site VPN. Now that's required in the Azure only deployment as well. Now, Microsoft recommend that for availability of your ADFS service, you deploy ADFS servers on-premise so that if you have an outage with that site-to-site VPN, you still maintain service. But more recently, you can now provide multiple site-to-site VPNs. So what we find is that deploying multiple site-to-site VPNs is a better option for resiliency there, because typically organizations that are using Azure are going to be using Azure for other services. And then as some of the more direct sort of networking connectivity solutions are available, that will change slightly again. Okay, so the other point that we haven't included in our architecture diagrams is domain controllers. So for reduction in latency in that authentication chain, it's recommended that you have at least one domain controller per federated domain that you have for Office 365 deployed into Azure as well. And then probably if you wanted to ensure high availability of that as well, you deploy two domain controllers in there as well. And again, having domain controllers in the Azure environment can give you other benefits if you're using other services within that environment as well. Just a quick note on Azure VNets. So you do need to plan your configuration carefully. Like we talked about, if you do want to have multiple site-to-site VPNs, you need to plan for that. You need to provision your VNet with those services available when you do it, because if you don't plan that correctly, then the only way to add things later to the VNet is you virtually deprovision all of your machines in that environment and then reprovision your VNet, reprovision all your machines. And if you've got a production service, then you're going to have a service-wide outage to do that. And I don't think that's quite palatable for a lot of organizations. Just a very quick note, if you really did want to get geographical DR for this solution, there is an Azure Traffic Manager, which we can use to redirect traffic. It's a manual failover, so we would need to manually redirect traffic to multiple geographic locations using that tool. And it's there available to you if you wish to design it that way. And just again, it's kind of a no-brainer, but just if you are thinking about costing and provisioning your servers to maintain high availability all the time, you do need to run all of the service components that we've discussed today 24 hours a day. So just consider the cost impact of doing that. Andreas is going to publish a link later on to the Azure cost calculator as well, so you guys can go in there and have a look and see what a solution like this might cost out at as well. Okay, so very quickly, just to summarise why we would deploy the main, concept of what we're talking about today, why deploy on Azure? So typically we can deploy within weeks rather than months for a typical on-premise deployment. So you can be a lot more dynamic and agile with the deployment. Probably not going to achieve a 10-minute deployment in production, like we said, but you can certainly do things a lot quicker than what you would under a more traditional environment. Scalability of the solution. So if we start to run into issues with capacity and performance, we can very easily and we can have scripts and things built already to push a button and elastically scale out and scale back and what have you if you have different sort of instances in your environment when you need to do that. The economy of the solution. So I talked about before a predictable known monthly cost versus investment in existing on-premise infrastructure when a lot of organisations are trying to move some of their services away. And if you've made an investment in Office 365, then you're certainly trying to move away from a lot of your on-premise infrastructure to be replaced with cloud services. And just another point on the economy side there is around those networking components. So you're getting those components and the high availability and security of those services, and they're effectively free with the other components of the service that you're deploying. Resiliency. So we talked about the availability sets before, and we talked about the ADFS and the WAP environments effectively being stateless, and how we can just have an issue, we can kind of rapidly replace those and still have the resiliency of the end-to-end service availability. And then lastly, around the security of the endpoint, the public endpoint security and the ACLs. But even just more broadly, the security of the Azure data center. So, you've got your intrusion detection, prevention, and all of the defense in depth sort of type security options that you have within the Azure environment. So that's just a quick wrap on why we believe it's simple and easy to deploy this configuration within the Azure environment. Okay, let's have a quick drink. So there's probably been a couple of sessions already. You may have heard yesterday a little bit about AAD Sync. Has everyone heard about AAD Sync? Okay, a few people have. So Microsoft calling it one sync service to rule them all. So effectively, AAD Sync is the replacement for what we traditionally know as DirSync. DirSync isn't going away at the moment. AAD Sync is being introduced to work side by side with DirSync. And it has a few of those benefits that I've listed there. So support for multi-forest configurations and even things like more advanced components of matching identities and being able to pick attributes and things if you've got objects that are moving between domains and maintaining a single immutable ID for those. Password failover, it's coming soon. So it's in the next release of the service. The service has recently gone GA in September, but doesn't include the password failover. Now, the reason we talk about that is, again, it's password failover is synchronizing a password hash of your on-premise password to the Azure environment. And what we can use that for, again, if we look at the context of high availability for single sign-on and a DR option, if you did have an issue with our single sign-on environment, then we can fall back to the password failover as a DR option. Now, it's kind of a pretty blunt option to use, and you want to make sure that you do have a significant problem with your federated single sign-on solution. If you're running it in Azure, again, you'd want to understand that there's going to be a significant problem. The password failover does have a two-hour time to invoke the service. So once you go in there and unfederate your domain, you effectively need to wait about 2 hours before people will be able to start signing on to the service as managed users with their on-premise synchronized password. Just a couple of other quick points around the AAD sync is around the advanced provisioning. So we can kind of be very granular around the attributes within the objects in your on-premise directory and how they get synchronized across. So you might have sensitive information in there that you don't want to sync. And we can also create some more granular filtering rules. Another really good benefit of it as well, which small things, and again in an enterprise environment, the privilege. So currently with the DirSync tool, you need to have an enterprise admin account to create it to be able to run and install that. And as anyone who's worked in enterprise organisations, sometimes it's hard to get a hold of that, and that can delay things as well. So being just taking out simple things like that can make provisioning a lot quicker and a lot easier as well. And then the last point, again, which is coming soon in the next release, is non-AD based directory sources. So being able to synchronize off LDAP sources or other structured data sources where identities might live. So effectively, it's taking away a lot of the complex sync activities that traditionally FIM may have done, and wrapping it into this single tool for your synchronization to Azure Active Directory. Okay, so we're going to do a quick demo, and over to Andreas.
Thank you, James. James had mentioned that there is if there is a total outage and about the password failover. Then James did mention as well about the how to convert the MSOL domain to a standard one rather than the federated one. Okay, I have a script here. Let's try this might work now instead of using the GUI. So hopefully it stops quicker. Oh well. Oh, look at that. Yes, please. We just stopped it. No, you're right. It's quicker with the GUI. Okay. So we just stopped. That service.
So we're just simulating a complete failure of the single sign-on or federated single sign-on solution. So.
It's very unlikely, but we did remember there is a total outage for the Azure services back in the April 2014. So if this happened to your federation services, and James did mention, how do I fall back with the password failover? So I have a script in here, which I will post it, and I will execute it later. So this is how to convert back from the federated domain back to a standard domain. So let's execute that. And it will take 2 hours, so we won't try it here because, it's already standard. I already kill it. So you can see that, that's already standard. So if you want to go back to federating the domain once you already converted to standard, anyone can guess what's the command? We need to convert it back to federated domain. Okay, yeah, and so we leave it running for the 2 hours.
Yeah, so we did try and pre-prepare a federated domain and fail it over earlier, but we had some issues with that. So like you say, like I mentioned before, if you are going to invoke this method of failover, you do want to make sure that you're confident that there's going to be an outage that's longer than 2 hours effectively. So users would be without authentication services for that 2 hours. Now, it's worth noting that if they did have a token cached within their browser for that time, they will still get, as long as you don't unfederate their domain, they'll still get, they'll still be able to authenticate. So that's probably something you would also need to consider before you would invoke this failover method.
Okay.
Okay, thanks Andreas. And then very quickly, I just wanted to touch about AAD Connect. So has anyone heard about AAD Connect yet? I know there's been one or two sessions on the AAD Connect, so a couple of people have heard of it. So AAD Connect is effectively just a wizard and a wrapper for your AAD Sync and your federated single sign-on deployment that we've talked about today. So I think feedback from Microsoft is that they want to be able to see their customers deploying Office 365 seats quicker and making it a lot easier to do that. So The idea of the AOD Connect wizard is that it's a single wizard that you can go away and plan, have a bunch of prerequisites that you need to plug into the wizard. And then it will go off and it'll do things like download all of this, all of the prerequisite components that you need for your ADFS servers and your WAP servers. It'll go away and configure it. You provide a public certificate for your Federation URLs. It'll publish that for you. It'll test it for you. So it's quite a useful, powerful tool. Probably do guys like Andreas and I out of a job, maybe. And it still has the flexibility to deploy... it still has the flexibility to deploy more complex scenarios that we've discussed today as well. So it's not just a simple, one ADFS, one WAP type scenario. You can deploy more complex scenarios. Just the last point there, that at the moment it isn't currently in public preview. So again, we'll publish a quick link to that public preview today. And you'll be able to go through there if you're interested, and you can download that, and you could potentially deploy some of the scenarios that we've talked about today using that wizard quite easily. Okay, so we're just coming to the end of the session. So I just wanted to touch on a couple of the key takeaways for you guys today and what we were hoping to educate you guys about. So got the three different deployment options for your federated single sign-on solution. Use the deployment method that best suits your authentication requirements. So have a think about some of the things that we talked about today, but just remember that the reasons that we talked about, or the benefits of deploying within the Azure environment, it's all those things about the high availability, the security, the resiliency, the scalability, all of those things. It's not as hard as you may think it is to deploy that pattern within the Azure environment. And then the last point is around the two directory synchronization points is around that Microsoft's trying to make this a lot easier for you guys to do and provide the tools and the services to make it easier for you to deploy these things. There's just our contact details. Feel free to reach out if you guys have any questions, if you shoot us an email or what have you. Andreas is going to publish a bunch of the content and the links that we've talked about today within his Twitter account, and the cloud blog as well. We've got some pretty smart guys who write a lot of good stuff in our blog as well, so check that out for a bunch of different things. And lastly, I just wanted to touch on the Azure user groups and the Office 365 user groups as well. So there's user groups here in Melbourne, so I encourage you guys to get along and get involved. I run the user group, the Office 365 user group in Sydney, and we've got one coming up, and a couple of my colleagues run the Sydney Azure user group as well, so get along to those if you can. And then there's just a couple of related sessions that you guys might like to check out. And finally, just wanted to say thanks very much. Thanks for your attendance, and thanks for sticking around and listening. And I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you got some good information out of it. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.